Welcome to the EQ Fit Podcast. Our mission is to equip people to prosper in every aspect of their life. Whether you're at home or in the workplace, we explore practical ways of improving success, satisfaction, finding balance, and building enjoyable and beneficial relationships. Thank you for joining us. In keeping with our new focus for the podcast of really getting down to brass tacks and talking about very specific challenges and how to overcome those, I hope I picked a good one today, and I hope you won't run and turn this off the minute you hear the word conflict, because that's what we're going to talk about today. I want to talk about mastering conflict. Most people dread the word conflict, but let me give you some statistics that I hope will encourage you to look at conflict in a new and a different way. Number one, did you know that teams who learn how to lean into those tough conversations where there can be conflict and probably is, can boost their innovation by 25%. That comes out of the Journal of Product Innovation Management. A 25% increase in innovation is huge. That's a competitive advantage right there. Second fact, Gallup indicates teams that engage in healthy conflict are 26% more likely to achieve better project outcomes. Sounds like a win to me. Number three, unresolved workplace conflict can cost organizations up to $359 billion a year. That is not good. And number four, research by the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development shows nearly 40% of workers report weekly conflict that impacts their productivity. And number five, according to Harvard Business Review, 25% of managers avoid conflict altogether, often leading to unresolved tensions and lower performance. Some of those things are positive because we're mastering conflict and navigating it well and resolving it. Others are very negative. If we avoid conflict, it isn't going to go away. It isn't going to get any better. As a matter of fact, if you avoid conflict, you're literally putting a ceiling over how much productivity you can achieve. Because anything that's unresolved that way, and I see it in so many of the people I work with, that my clients, where they just struggle with having those tough conversations because they see conflict as confrontation. Well, those statistics I just shared with you, that should be enough to change our mindset from avoidance to proactive resolution. Conflict doesn't need to be an obstacle. It can be the catalyst that propels a team to new heights of collaboration, creativity, and success. Okay, so how do we do that? Well, it has to start somewhere. And that somewhere is literally a mindset shift. Seeing conflict as an opportunity. So think reframing. If we can reframe conflict as growth. So what does that look like? Well, instead of treating conflict like a negative event, see it as an opportunity for problem solving and for improved processes. You know, I was talking to one of my clients last week about their upcoming annual evaluations. And I don't know about you, but pretty much everybody I know thinks that annual evaluations are just a formal setting for conflict. And I know it doesn't always have to be that way. And there are some organizations that do that very well. But if you're dealing with performance that is not up to standards and you want to see changes, can I give you a couple of secrets I've learned over the years? Number one, do away with the annual evaluation process. I understand there are organizations that have to have something in place. Here's what I'm saying. If you need to have an annual evaluation, do it. But don't leave it at that, because it is so typical for employees to walk into an annual evaluation and have their manager say, "Do you remember 10 months ago when you did this? Do you remember 7 months ago when you did this?" That's not helpful. Hopefully, we are taking care of those things very, very close to when they happen. And I have other episodes on building a culture of constructive feedback and redirecting performance. I've got other material that could help people on this. But the most effective way I have ever seen to give good feedback and to deal with conflict as it arises is keep it small. Don't let it get big. Don't let it get 7 or 8 months down the road. Deal with it immediately. Redirect when you need to redirect. Reinforce as much as possible. And do it on a weekly and a monthly basis with quarterly check-ins. That's one thing we can do to look at conflict in a new way. There is always going to be conflict in our lives and at work, but how we deal with it is going to be critical. That Harvard Business Review study, teams that view conflict as a platform for growth often foster higher levels of trust and collaboration in the long run. And isn't that what we want? Okay, second thing to focus on here. Leverage diverse perspectives. So instead of conflict, and I use this a lot, I use this analogy a lot when I'm talking with people. Are you moving into conflict from a principled or a position? What's the difference? A principle is we're here for the good of everybody. We're trying to figure out what's good for everybody. A position is, I think I'm right, I'm digging a trench and I'm throwing hand grenades at everybody else. And okay, don't take that literally, because I don't mean it literally, but you understand what I'm saying. If you come from a place of position, it's very easy to just negate other people's perspectives. Well, what if we were to incorporate those? When people with different viewpoints come together, innovation flourishes. Conflicts arise naturally out of differing perspectives, but when managed constructively, they can lead to more creative solutions. Embracing these kinds of unique angles allows us to address potential blind spots and future-proof our organizations. This ability to master conflict, to resolve conflict in a constructive and proactive way, is a strength that leads directly to competitive advantage if leaders and teams can master these skills. Let's look more closely at how to do that. If you know anything about me by now, you know I'm going to work in emotional intelligence somewhere in these episodes. So why is that important? Because conflict is rife with emotions. Number one, people avoid them. Think about the emotions. When you're stepping into a situation where you know there's going to be conflict, be honest with yourself. What are the top three emotions that you feel when you know you're walking into conflict? Is it frustration, anxiety, stress, fear? anxiousness? Is it just that physical feeling of being ill? You just feel sick. Well, all of that is being driven by emotions. Maybe you're angry. Maybe somebody's done something that has to be resolved and you're angry about it. You know, how far up that anger escalator are you? Are you at annoyance and frustration, or are you at rage and being livid? I mean, there's a lot of different levels on that anger escalator. Again, if we understand the skills of emotional intelligence, we can then better deal with the emotional drivers beneath this conflict so that we can come out of it with a better outcome. So Daniel Goleman's model of emotional intelligence has five domains, and those are the ones I'll talk about: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. Each of these plays a vital role in helping people and team members, leaders, team members, whoever it is, to tackle conflict productively. And that's where we want to get to. Conflict is actually a very good thing. It's not a bad thing. We can learn more, do more, be more innovative, be more creative when we embrace conflict, not for the fight, not for the confrontation. And I know there may be some people out there, they enjoy that. I'm talking about embrace conflict as a chance to learn, to grow, to collaborate better, and to solve problems. So let's start with self-awareness. Why does it matter? Recognizing your emotions and triggers is the first step in managing them, what I call name it to tame it. If you are aware that specific words, actions, or circumstances cause you to stress or be frustrated, you can better navigate those tense moments. So how can we put that into some kind of practical methodology? Keep a conflict journal. And I really would love to impress upon people, as much as I hated the whole concept of journaling when I was younger, I do it now because it really does help. There is a release to putting it down, either digitally or on paper. Keep a conflict journal to track situations that evoke strong emotions and strong emotional responses. Reflect on what triggered you. How can you respond more calmly next time? What would you change? What would you do differently? If we can shine a light on our reactions, we can reduce the risk of being blindsided during difficult conversations. The next area we can utilize in emotional intelligence is self-regulation. If we can master self-control under stress, we foster a more respectful and solution-oriented environment. Emotional outbursts or defensive behaviors can derail what could be otherwise productive dialogue. And that's what we're trying to get to, is productive dialogue. How can we put that into practice? Implement a short pause strategy during heated discussions. Take a few deep breaths, count to 10, maybe suggest a brief timeout. This is a very simple technique, but it allows the tensions to cool down and prevents emotional spirals from escalating. If you're getting into tough conversations where you know there's going to be unresolved conflict, we do not want escalation. We want to focus on the issue, not the person, because that's when things can get heated, get defensive, and go in the wrong direction. The third area of emotional intelligence that helps with conflict is motivation. So why does motivation matter here? Well, first, it is intrinsic motivation that we're talking about. It helps people stay focused and on the kind of the greater good of the team, right? And that goes back to that principled approach I talked about versus a positional approach. Instead of what's good for me, what's good for all of us? And having that kind of a focus will help keep the arguments out of conflict resolution. It keeps discussions solution-driven rather than ego-driven. How can we put that into practice? Well, first, engage in a conflict conversation by articulating shared team goals. If we can kind of set the goals out there, the vision out there, so people can see it, it's going to be so much better, because then we have something to look to as a standard, and the way that we converse with each other will be better because we're focused on that objective goal instead of maybe butting heads with somebody and egos flaring and all that kind of thing. It can reduce tension. It can foster respect. For instance here, remind everybody that the aim is to serve customers better or to improve a process. It's not about who's right. I learned a long time ago in my marriage that being right is not always a winning strategy. And I can do a whole episode or 10 on that one, but just want to share with you, it's not as much about being right or blaming somebody. It's about collaborating to resolve things, to get that conflict resolution we're looking for. Keep the bigger picture in mind so that we can redirect negative energy toward constructive outcomes. Now, this is where one of the big ones comes in. It's empathy. When individuals strive to understand others' perspectives and what's driving them, their emotional drivers, it reduces tension and it fosters respect, which makes resolution more achievable. A meta-analysis published in the Journal of Applied Psychology found that empathetic listening significantly increases team cohesion and performance. Okay, what's the difference between regular listening and empathetic listening? When you invest yourself into a conversation, when you care about what the other person is thinking and feeling and their perspectives, that's empathetic. If you're just hearing, that's not empathy. So it really is an investment in that communication with that other person. How do we put this into practice? Well, first, reflective listening. Reflective listening is doing what I've talked about with empathetic listening, but then reflecting on what was said to ensure that you understand what the person is thinking, feeling, what their perspective is, where they're coming from. Literally putting yourself in their shoes. That is reflective listening. After the other person speaks, paraphrase their main point and confirm that you understand it. I use that all the time. Here's the question. Here's a freebie for you. The question that I use, if I understood you correctly, and then I ask the rest of the question, which is really a reframing or an understanding, a confirming question to what they have said. And that many times leads to a deeper conversation or even some refinement, because we don't always communicate exactly what we're trying to say to someone in the same way. So as we think about this, we have to think about, are we doing the right things? Are we listening well? Are we understanding what that other person is saying to us? And not just saying, what are they emoting? I know a lot of people don't want to talk about emoting. They don't want to talk about the drama of emotions and all of that. And this is probably why 25% or more of managers and leaders avoid conflict, because they don't want to deal with the emotional aspects. I guarantee you, though, it's not going to go away, and you need to. And empathy is a skill you can use so you don't get drugged down into the drama, but you navigate it, which is the whole point here. These are very practical ways to practice empathy for conflict resolution. Then social skills. The ability to communicate effectively, build rapport, and resolve disputes is foundational to successful conflict resolution. Strong social skills help steer the conversation toward compromise and toward mutual benefit. And social skills are just all of those wonderful skills of communicating and interacting with other people, and how do we do that with respect? How do we build trust? How do we communicate effectively? What is our clarity of communication? Are we helping others understand things the way that we do? How do we do this? Use open-ended questions such as, what do you propose? Or how do you see this affecting our timeline? And use neutral language to invite collaboration. One of the toughest questions that people ask that trigger conflict is, why did you do it that way? Why? Why can very, very much feel like judgment. And so we want to be careful with the way that we phrase things. And the intent may not be to create that feeling in somebody else, but you've got a sender of the communication and you have a receiver of the communication, and both sides count. So we have to think about those things. If you sense hostility rising or defensiveness, interject with a simple statement like, let's find what we can agree on. Then let's address our differences. Those are some very, very practical ways that we can leverage the skills of emotional intelligence to foster and master conflict resolution. Now we're going to look more deeply at how we can have specific action steps to reach that point of conflict mastery. So when it comes to action steps, I want you to keep the word calm in mind. C-A-L-M, calm. That's going to be very important because the last thing we want to do is escalate conflict, which turns into confrontation, which turns into a war, which isn't going to help anybody. So how can we do that? How can we practice conflict resolution in a calm manner? First, set ground rules. Encourage everyone to refrain from using personal attacks or interruptions. Interruptions are a big one. That can trigger people because they feel like you're not allowing them to get out what's important to them and say it. And all you have to do is give them a chance to finish, and you can avoid those escalations that come from interruptions. Establish a safe space which makes everybody feel respected and heard. Here's the second thing you can do. Focus on the issues, not the personalities. Rather than saying, you're always late, or why did you do that? Highlight the impact. Okay, when deadlines slip, it affects the entire team's workflow. You see the difference there? This keeps the dialogue constructive rather than accusatory or judgmental. That's what we want to stay away from. I mean, you may want to do that, and you may be the leader, and you may have a right to do that. It's still not going to get you any further down the road. You may make you feel better for a little while, but you still got the same problem. And you're not going to be able to redirect behavior if you pass judgment on someone, if you verbally judge them, because they're going to throw up a defensive wall that's even stronger than the last time. And you want to break down those defense mechanisms. So the third thing we can do, use yes and language. So borrowed from improvisational theater, yes, and helps you acknowledge the other person's perspective before building on it. This signals that you value their input and are eager to find common ground. And the fourth thing that you can do as a practical action step is seek a win-win outcome. Strive for solutions that benefit everybody involved. Now, that doesn't mean everybody's going to get everything they want. That's compromise. But we can get win-wins out of these conflict situations. It might mean negotiating a compromise that addresses each party's highest priorities. Maybe they don't get everything, but they get one or two of their top priorities taken care of. What's the long-term impact of this? This is what I call future-proofing your organization. If you can build this constructive conflict resolution where it's proactive and you don't let it fester and build for long periods of time, what can it do? Well, first, you're going to get gains in innovation. The 25% innovation boost cited in the Journal of Product Innovation Management underscores how constructive conflict can be. I know that sounds weird, how constructive conflict can be. But the reality is it can spark new ideas, innovations, creative solutions. If we normalize conflict as healthy, as an essential part of your teamwork, and frankly, as an essential part of growth, you're really in a place where you can take your team and your organization into continuous improvement, continuous growth, and a competitive advantage, which is exactly where you want to be. If we can create this culture where we can resolve conflict in good and productive ways, we're going to improve resilience. Teams that regularly engage in respectful conflict resolution, they become more adaptable. According to organizational psychologist Adam Grant, the ability to debate vigorously yet maintain strong relationships is a key marker of high-performance teams. And even more, you get better retention and a better culture. When people feel they can voice their concerns and ideas without fear of retaliation, they're more likely to remain in your organization. This openness cultivates a positive, honest culture where success is shared and learning is constant. And I can't stress how important that is, because to have constant learning, you have to develop a culture of a growth mindset. That has to start with individuals, and then it needs to bubble up throughout the entire organization. So let me close with some final thoughts here. Conflict doesn't have to be a dreaded event. It can be a strategic tool. By integrating the five categories of emotional intelligence into conflict resolution strategies, not only do you resolve disputes faster, but you build a culture of respect, trust, innovation, and continuous improvement. After all, if you think about it, the organizations best prepared for the future aren't the ones that run from conflict. They're the ones that harness it for greater collaboration, innovation, and creativity. So if we're ready to lean into conflict, we will be watching our team thrive. That's where we need to be. Start by practicing self-awareness and self-regulation in your own interactions. Then guide your team to do the same thing. And it doesn't matter what role you play on the team. You don't have to be the leader. You can do this yourself. You can lead by example here. Embrace conflict as your secret ingredient for success. Because when you manage conflict well, It's truly the game changer your organization, your team, and you really need. Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you have any questions about this week's episode, or maybe a suggestion for future episodes you'd like us to explore, please contact us through our website at eqfit.org. For more information and inspiration, connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube at eqfit.org.